All right. Good afternoon. Goedemiddag. Mijn naam is Gert Rapers. Welkom bij deze sessie. I've been told to do it in English because that's what I speak all day. Because in 96 I moved to the US and my Dutch is not better than those who are doing an inburgeringscursus here. So welcome to the session about WCF data services beyond the basics. Now this is a level 200 session, so beyond the basics is relative, just to warn you up front. A little bit about me and why am I talking to you about WCF. So I'm a SQL Server developer from origin, as some of you might know. Recently I joined the Active Directory team working on Cloud Directory, Next Generation Directory. Actually, my next session will be more related to what I'm actually doing. But one of the things that we're doing is exposing directory information through WCF data services. And so what this session is about is basically a reflection of what we learned doing this, because last couple of times I spoke to you, you always appreciate it. It's like when we talked about all the problems that we run into ourselves by doing this. So this is sort of in the same trend, trying to talk about is like what we've done, things that we've run into and why we made certain decisions. So as such, it's like I want to talk about two things. It's like before we dive into things, I want to start off with a little overview of OData and the way that we view it. This might be slightly different than the OData team would present it. And then it's like I want to talk about one specific topic, which is custom data service providers. Because one of the things that we figured out is like pretty quickly when we started to develop a data service for our cloud directory services and our on-premise directory services and some other services where we were going to expose data streams, is that the current infrastructure, as it's being presented, doesn't always work. And we know that. That's why we have custom data providers. So actually, I want to take you through the tour of how we actually arrived to the conclusion that we needed to create one. Okay? So before we actually move into talking about WCF data services, what does it take to push data onto the web? So we started this crusade roughly in 2007, when we built this project Astoria, you might know this, which is the old code name for this, where we started to expose SQL Server data through web services endpoints. And there are a couple of things that we learned. So first of all, it's like the industry evolved dramatically from WS star kind of protocols, heavy SOAP-based protocols, to a REST protocol. The key requirement being it's like just use HTTP, use HTTP GET, PUT, POST, DELETE as the basic building blocks for what you're doing. Now, that has pros and cons. It's like, as we found, it's like when moving into this, because that also makes a statement about composability. Sure, SOAP has downsides. One for all, it's like it's not small. But it does provide a degree of composability with different protocols. So for example, things that you took for granted in a WCF world, where you can compose a security session into your world by using WS Trust and using WS Federation to get your SAML tokens. This now all of a sudden has to start working differently inside the REST world, right, which is why we needed new protocols like OWASP, etc. All based on the same principle, basically use HTTP with its current verbs. The second piece that we learned is like if you want to expose something onto the web, is like you need to do this using standard and uniform patterns. Now this might be somewhat of an open door for you guys, but it's like every time you expose something, it's like you want to walk the same pattern to find out things like, what is the information being exposed? Where can I find my service document? Where is the service being exposed? What is the naming convention? How do I navigate? How do I perform a metadata operation, etc.? So one of the key things that we've done is standardized around the set of uniform patterns to expose data onto the web. The third part, which is really key, is to focus on the data, not on the format. And this also comes back to the SOAP versus REST discussion to some degree. One of the things that we also learned by doing this is that you as a consumer are more interested in the data, or mainly interested in the data, and not in the way how you get that data, as long as that data is accessible in a format which is standard and can be accessed through a variety of APIs. And this is another big thing which is driven through REST much more heavily, is the involvement of all the APIs across all platforms, not just the Microsoft stack, to get access to this information. And then the last point, which is one of the reasons, for example, if you go back to SQL Server 2005, one of the things that we did is we exposed an HTTP endpoint as your data access point into SQL Server. In 2008, we immediately saw that we deprecated that functionality. Reason being, it's like you don't want to make your store your HTTP endpoint. That's a completely different ballgame. You want to have different ways of exposing and controlling the data, which have nothing to do not of the business of the actual underlying data store, which you actually want to abstract out of this whole picture. Besides that, it's like we'll certainly or quickly see that databases are not the only data source that we want to pull from. Right? We want to make it in such a way that it's like there is a opaque entry point into data. So how have we done this? So as I said, we started Project Astoria in 2007, which was effectively taking WCF, building a set of endpoints on top of this, exposing information inside, at that point in time, exclusively SQL Server, to expose that to the web. So that's still true today. If we look at how we've built this, the key thing that is different is that we've taken an initiative to standardize the protocol as an open data protocol. And the OData protocol is like a REST-based protocol, and we'll see that in a moment. The WCF data services is nothing more than the Microsoft implementation of the OData endpoint. All right, so we're talking about one specific implementation here on top of our existing stack, leveraging WCF. It's not a true channel architecture, though. It's like if you think that it's a composable channel architecture that you can say is like in the true WCF trend, you can say it's like, oh, now I want my binary protocol, so I'm switching out some components in my WCF channel. It's pretty hardwired to REST. That is things that we're working on, because we know there are requirements, especially when you start to use this kind of technology on-premise, there are needs to actually have a little bit leaner protocols. All right. But for now, it's like it's REST and REST only. So what is OData trying to achieve? So by creating a standard protocol, we're not only creating an ecosystem which is accessible for much a broader environment than just the Microsoft stack. But what we're trying to do here is open up data in a way that it can be accessed across the stacks. So the three key things that we've done here. First of all, come up with a uniform representation of our structured data. We're doing that inside two formats. We encapsulate data structures inside the Atom format, or inside the JSON format. And this allows us to play between all major stacks inside the REST industry. We have a uniform convention for navigating, filtering, sorting, paging, ordering, selecting top operators, exposing metadata through a URI convention. This allows us to navigate your data structure and compose queries through a mechanism that is opaque to the underlying data store. And then we leverage the standard HTTP properties, both the verbs like get, put, delete, in a consistent fashion, but also the addressability aspect. So this actually builds us up to an ecosystem, which goes much broader than actually the Microsoft stack today. So we have a protocol, and there are two sides of the protocol. There is a consumer side, and there is a producer side. And as we've seen this, it's like, and actually, 2 weeks ago at Mix, we relaunched the whole OData initiative with a much more prominent set of both providers and clients that actually integrate into this. So both from the iPhone to the Windows Phone, PHP, Excel, from all places you can actually gather this information. From data services, which are varying from SharePoint 2010, which exposes every list view as a data service, SQL Server reporting services in the 2008 R2 timeframe exposes every report as an OData feed. Exposure of standard data through the Delos initiative. And then it's like you can take your own stuff and actually expose that, and that's what we're mainly going to cover today. If you want to know more, it's like there is odata.org where you can go and get the information. Now, why would you actually want to expose data through an OData feed? That's then the next question that we would be interesting in answering. So first of all, it allows you to make your data accessible to a much broader variety of tools. Now, to give you a little anecdote, it's like when we were looking at building up the new directory, we looked at it's like the ecosystem that is out there. How many of you know LDAP? Wow, I'm actually surprised. How many of you program LDAP? Okay, that's better. So LDAP is one of those arcane query languages that we use in the directory services, and most people, as I found out, learned it because out of necessity. You needed to do something. It's not that you wanted to learn it. It wasn't the next sexiest thing you were learning in university. Right. X500 data structures, it's like expose this relation or this hierarchical data structure that you need to navigate through LDAP. Most people don't understand that these days. Maybe it's age, right? Maybe it's like we're too comfortable with relational databases. So what do people do? They stick it inside a database so they can do queries over it to do interesting things. So why are they doing this? Because they want to get access to the data in a way that they understand that they can use tooling that is standard to them. They want to be able to use Crystal Reports to write a report. They want to use Excel to build a pivot table. They want to use Eclipse to write their Java application consuming this stuff. So what they want is a standard way to discover their data, and to build on top of this. And that's exactly what you would get if you start to expose a data feed. Right. Now, that actually brings it back to a very common denominator kind of exposure. But that's where we are again. And it's interesting, since I used to work on ODBC. Right? And one of the big dreams of the industry about ODBC was is like coming up with the canonical API that you could use for every data source. Now, if there was one data access API that came reasonably close, it was ODBC. OLEDB never was even remotely there. JDBC is derived from ODBC. But it also, it always assumed that you had a query language that was based on the backend system. So you used PL/SQL to Oracle and SQL to SQL Server and all the variations. What you want to do is you want to be able to create a data set or a data feed that allows you to integrate it into a wide variety of consumers over a standard protocol by exposing standard building blocks. And this all starts with metadata. The first thing, right, the first pattern is, like, how can I discover where you are? Which that's actually the first pattern. I should start there. So that's your service document. Right? This allows you to discover where something is, and now it becomes a discoverable service. Once you are at the discoverable service, you need to figure out what is the server has to offer. So you need to provide metadata in order that describes the shapes that you are exposing. Right. Then you need to be able to discuss or negotiate which format you're going to talk to. So are you going to talk atoms? Are you going to talk JSON in this case? Which is like, we already, it's a given here that we're talking HTTP. Right. So there are not many choices that we have, effectively. Then we need a standard way of navigating the namespace and defining filter expressions through a query language. And so that results in a set of URLs. We need to be able to not only read that data, but potentially write it as well, depending on my situation. All right. If I need to start writing, there are interesting problems. All right. What is my isolation level? What is the concurrency aspect of a batch that I'm sending when I'm sending an HTTP put or post? All right. What is the concurrent? It's like, I'm not going to be able to do things like a distributed transaction, right? It's like that stuff that you don't want to do between two HTTP sessions. That would be suicidal. All right. So, and you want to be able to expose that over all sorts of data sources. Other sources should have been renamed to data sources. Probably didn't save my slide, I'm sorry. All right. So that gives us a way of actually communicating with that. So we already talked about some of these things. It's like, so we have some products that expose themselves as WCF or as OData. All right. As I said, SharePoint being one of them. But there are also external parties. All right. So I can go out and just launch a browser, and if these, I hope the web is up. Very good. Well, all right. It's always interesting to do a demo with live connection in the Netherlands, apparently. All right. No way. Okay. Oh, okay. There we go. Finally. So on the OData side, you will actually be able to find producers and clients. Now what we do there is we actually expose those as data feeds as well. So first of all, you can walk up with your browser and ask for your service information. Right. What does this do? This actually tells us it's like what are the entities that you actually are going to expose. I can always ask for the metadata, right? Standard way, I'm walking up to a service point, so I figured out where I need to go. Now I need to answer the second question, is like, what do you have? How does it look? I can always ask for metadata to be exposed. Once I have the metadata, I can now start, okay, give me some information. And this is simply by building up a URI string that brings me back into this. So I can move and start walking into this and figuring out things. So, okay, so one of the things that we have is Netflix. All right, so maybe if you've seen, how many of you have seen Mix? Only a few. All right, then probably most of you haven't seen this. All right, so let's look at the source. All right, because what comes back here is really an XML document, right? Because I turned on my RSS feed, it looks nicer. So one of the things that you get back is that Netflix exposes their viewing list online through a set of OData feeds. And you would say, it's like, why would they do this? Right? What is the business case? Why would a Netflix, right? For those of you who don't know what Netflix is a US online provider of movies. You can rent movies and you can watch movies on demand over the internet. All right, so they're competing with the regular telco or the regular cable companies. Okay? So they're very interested in exposing their data so you can start to do things. So you can now say, okay, tell me something about the titles that you have. All right, so okay, here we have some of the titles, and he immediately comes back, and we will start to see things about what they have. Okay, so this is not an ideal experience. So let's switch the experience and actually move to a another tool, which is a little Silverlight tool, all right, which runs out of the browser. So this is an out-of-browser experience in Silverlight 4. You can run it as a browser experience as well. But what it does the same steps that I did before. It walks up to a service point, right? I gave it a URI. It walks up to the OData feed. It sees Netflix, and it displays the information that we have about Netflix. All right, so what we see here are movies. So I can start to build up a query and say, okay, I want the rating to be equal to PG, all right, so we can all watch it. The release year, my favorite year, is 1980, okay? And so let's go and see that. All right, so go. Right, so I have my information. Now I want to order by average. If I can type rating, and I want to do that descending, and then I cannot type apparently. I made it because I need to make sure that this is there. All right, what am I doing wrong again? That's why I saved it the first time, because like I always make this mistake. Sorry about that. All right. Copy, paste. Is that too hard for me? Thank you. Ah. All right. He complains that it's an invalid URI. Yeah, I know it's invalid. Okay. Oh. All right. And now we're no longer connected. Okay, let me try this again. No, I want you to connect to Netflix. Thank you. All right. All right, so completely baffled by why it doesn't like me. Okay, I'm not going to waste your time on it. So, anyhow, it's like what you would get is like a standard string like this. All right, that says it's like, all right, I'm going to filter. Oh, I saw what I missed. I missed the container part. Some expressions, and then it's like an order by clause, and you would have seen that actually it would have been Star Wars, who was the most popular movie at the time. Now, why is that interesting? Because at the end of the day, it's like it produces a link that will bring back traffic to the Netflix site. All right, so it's like you can start to integrate data and then bring it back wherever you need to bring it back to. Now, this is one example. It's like there are other examples, like governments that are starting to do this, like the city of Edmonton, actually, in Canada, exposes all things like bus routes, train routes, schedules, all that kind of thing, like a service or as a service onto the web. So if you have these producers, the next thing is like, so how do I get access to this, right? It's great that I can do things in a browser, but I do want to create a more interesting programming experience at the end of the day. So I want to be able to wire it up, as you saw me use the Data Explorer, or the OData Explorer that uses Silverlight. I want to hook it up to things like Silverlight, WinForms, inside a web page, etc. And I don't want to craft these URIs myself. So one of the things that we do, actually, which we leverage under the covers, is something that we call link to URL. All right. So what do we do here? Think about it this way. What does link do? Link allows you to create an expressional representation against a set of metadata. What does the metadata come from? Dollar metadata. All right, I can walk up to a service endpoint. I can always ask for your metadata. So now, I have the description of my entities, effectively. Even that, if I don't have entities, I have a description. I have metadata. So now, what I can start to do is craft a link expression that reflects that in my application. Right. So that becomes a link to URL conversion. Right. We take your link expression, we transform it into URL, and we return an iQueryable and pack it inside an Atom pub. Right? And that's how we communicate it back. So let's look at this. Let's go here. Let's look at another nifty tool, which is LinkPads. In case you don't know about this tool, if you're trying to understand Link, you should be using this tool. The reason being is that it gives you an interactive environment for testing out and writing your link queries and doing things with it. And so it's much more productive than writing it in code, compile, then look inside the debugger what the results are. Okay, so it actually allows us to hook up to the same Netflix site. It sees the same entries. I can navigate the shapes of the entities that I would be able to reason upon. I see what things are navigation structures, because it's like titles is something that I can navigate on, right? If I'm at genres, I can move to titles. I can move from languages to titles, right? So these are basic navigation points inside my entity model that allows me to navigate through this. Okay, so let's take this and go to titles and simply say, we're going to write a select statement. All right, so let's try to do the same select statement as I was trying to do before. All right, so we were saying that the rating was equal to PG. All right, and the release year was equal to 9080. And if I'm not mistaken, I am. If you switch languages often enough, you get confused by quotes. All right. You will go back and you will find the result set that actually, in this case, Netflix returns to me on this query. Now, what happened under the cover, right, is that this query, if I would now say it's like order by T average rating, I think that's the one, right? Average rating, double, okay? If you would look what the query is that's being generated, you will see it's like that. It's like we would, what Link does is nothing else than transpose the interaction with these entities on the fly to this URI string, which can now be packaged inside my HTTP payload, sent back to the server. What is the server going to do with this? The server is will transpose it back, project it on top of the data store, execute it, return an iQueryable, and the iQueryable result will be packaged and sent back. Okay. So that gives you an idea about how this actually pushes it into the programming model, at least in the .NET side of the house. Now, there are other ways that you can do this in JavaScript. You can integrate it with jQuery. It's like there are various ways of where this actually integrates with other parts. All right. As I said, it's like this is not exclusive because it's all REST-based. So you can hook it into JavaScript. You can hook it into PHP on the phone, iPhone with Objective-C++, et cetera. Okay. So much for our overview. So we looked at this, and we started discussing, okay, so we have a directory, we have X500 data, we need to expose this, right? We want to make this data accessible to applications in a much more seamless form. And so we started building prototypes, and we talked to the WCF data services guys at that point in time, the Astoria team, what do you have? So the first thing they said is like, great, you have your stuff inside SQL Server, create an entity data model, expose that. How many of you have seen that demo? Not everybody? Wow. Okay. So the standard demo, which I'm not going to do because I imagined it's like you were beyond the basics. Sorry. What is the standard demo? You walk up to a database, you create an entity data model, and you say, wire it up, and I'm done. So that's great. All right, what does it do? It reflects over the entity data model, turns that into metadata, exposes that as the metadata feeds, and now it's like your OData client can start to use this. So everything that you expose as an entity data model can theoretically be exposed. Why do I say theoretically? The question becomes is like, how do I navigate my model, right? The question now is not so much like, do I have entities? Can I write queries to saturate the information inside of this? But how do I navigate these URIs? Does that navigation tree make sense? All right, so for example, in many places, you will have a join table. Right, you have some many-to-many relationship. How are you going to expose that through a URI navigational tree? Huh. Not nice. All right, that doesn't work. So what you want to do is like you want to start creating another experience. Now, entity data model has an answer for that too. It's called client view, so you can start building up your client's data model using client views and doing that. If you go back to the Is this linked bad? No, this is linked bad. If you go back to the results, right, that are being returned from Netflix, you will see that we're at some places we're returning complex types. So this is exactly what we've done with Netflix, right? With Netflix, we started, it was all in the SQL Server database. We created an entity data model, and we said, kaboom, here it is. And then we started playing with it. Didn't make any sense. Why? Because effectively we were leaking the description and our entity model onto the web, right? It's like what we were providing to the web was a one-to-one correlation of our physical data store. It was a type, table per type implementation of the entity model. And at that point in time, you were actually navigating the table structures. Now, that could make sense in certain cases, but it's like, as we quickly found out, we wanted to have a very set of simple structures inside the Netflix world that we could deal with. Titles, people, languages, awards, etc. These are things people can reason over. And this is actually completely different than the way that they describe it underneath in their physical structure. So some of the entries are mapped into complex data types. So that was another thing that we needed to do. Okay. Now, what if I cannot use the entity framework? What are my options? So option number one is like we have a reflection provider. So what does a reflection provider do? Well, as the name implies, it reflects over the type that you give it, and then it turns it into an atom pub feed or a JSON representation. The key thing here is that all these classes need to be iQueryable, because otherwise we cannot reason over it. So what we do is we look for all the iQueryable properties inside some context object and represent those back. So let's look at that. So I can close this. I'll do this. Okay. I want to stop this too. Was I debugging this? No. All right. So what do I have? I have a basic service. I'm running WS 2010 right now. You can run this in WS 2008 SP1 as well. If you want to do the custom data provider, you need to make sure that you have the latest update for WCF data services, which is released in February of this year. So you have to go and update this. But you can do exactly the same on 3.5 than you can do on 4.0 effectively. All right, so I'm actually using 2008 and 2010 interleaved in this demo. So what I have is a ASP.NET web application to host my WCF data service. All right, so what I've done is I created a data service or my application, and then I said, add new item, and I selected a data service, which brings in a .svc file, which is my service document, which I have over here. Right. Inside this is my service entry point. Right. You will get my service of type T, which right now it hasn't been defined yet. So what are we going to do? The first thing that we're going to do is we're going to do something very basic. Imagine you have some classes that you want to expose. All right, just you have a class with some data in there, and you want to make an OData feed out of this. What do you need to do? Okay, well, I have such a class already created. It's more than simple, it's very simple. Right. So it's the person class. Right. It has some strings, my first name, last name. It has an age. And of course, we need a key. One of the key things that you might not have in your class is you need to have a certain key. Because otherwise, it's like we have a navigational problem. Okay? This key doesn't have to be an int. It is a lot easier if it is an int, though. Right? Packaging it, it's like expressing it inside the URI. I am just creating, in this case, a list of persons. So I created my little family here. Right? Me and my three daughters. And I'm exposing on top of the class that my key that the data service should be using is the property named key. If I would have called it ID, it would have been automagic. I hate those kind of things personally, right? Because it's like, I don't know why I don't like them, but it's like, so I always want to be explicit. That's why I argue so much with my wife, but okay. So I have this class, which is described as an entity, and now I want to expose that. And the way that I'm going to expose this, I'm going to create another class, which exposes a property of type iQueryable, which is nothing more than it returns, in this case, the very simple example of I had a list of persons, right? And so I have this static function, which returns a list of persons, and I can take that list and return that as an iQueryable, right? Standard plumbing. That's all I have to do. Now, the only thing left is that I need to say that, so this is the context that I'm going to use. This is what exposes my iQueryables. I need to hook this up to my data service and tell it that my data service reasons over these types. Okay? So, if I had enough sleep, I should be able to compile. I can say view in browser. It will go to my service point, and sure enough, people shows up, because it's a public class. Reflection reflects over it. I can ask for the metadata. Right, it has a key, it has a first name, last name, an age. The property ref of key is the key, right? So it knows what is the navigational key that I'm going to use. So now I can ask for people. All right, and let's turn this back. So contents, RSS setting, no feed reading. Okay. Okay, so here I have people, and I can now start to do things like, okay, filter on age equals 10. Let's go to my help for a dumb presenter. Okay. It knows that I have people. Here are my people. I should be able to build a query where I say equal to 10. Add this as the expression. Okay. Go. And there you have my oldest daughter. I'm not sure why I cannot type this inside in the URI, but that's my deficiency, not the system. Okay? So, we exposed our class as a data stream. Now, we'll see later on, it's like how we can move further, and it's like how you can make more classes and relate them to each other and create navigational structure between it, but it's like, this is, we'll get there, don't worry. Okay? So, okay, so I have another source, right? It's like, I actually, it's like, and this is my personal favor, is like, I really like Link to SQL. I don't know why, but it's like, So let's add a Link to SQL model. Okay, and let's go here. Good old Northwind, right? Some tables, like you've just seen this 1,000 times, right? Employees, customers, products. Right, let's pull some of this stuff in. Categories, all right. There we go. All right, so let's save that. Okay, so it generates my classes. And now I want to hook this up to my service. Okay, so what is my context class? Right, so it's called the class one data context. Okay, so go to my service, and all I'm doing is switching this one out for this guy, build it, and walk up to my service and expose this. Same principle, right? It's like what it does, this is nothing different than reflecting over my own class. What does a link data context do? It exposes a set of properties of the type of iQueryable. Right, so right now it's like, so here I am. I can walk up to orders. No, not there. Orders. Okay, that needs to do some work. Okay, here we have some orders. And so I actually, it's like I have this order, okay? So let's replace this with this order. And so what do I want to know? It's like I actually want to know something about the employee that sold me this order. And so you can see that I can now already navigate the structures here, right? It's like because the link entity model has the reflection of it. Now you actually saw me be pretty selective, right, when it comes to the classes I've pulled in here. So let's pull in these two remaining guys. Order details and I think it's customer territory or order territory, I don't know. Let's compile. Okay. Yes, I know it's updated, fine. Let's do this. View in browser. Boom. Error. All right. So most of you is like who want to play is like what do? And normally in Link, they take all the tables, pull them in, immediately are handed with this easy to understand error message. This is all security. Don't expose stuff. This is standard ASP.NET behavior and WCF behavior. So, okay, so how do you go about this to fix this? Okay, so let's go a little bit beyond the basics here. So, first of all, I can tell at the service level that I want to expose my errors. So, config, right, and use verbose errors. Seems like a good idea when I need it. So you set it to true, if you really want that to happen. All right. Now this will, let's just see what happens. All right. Okay, so, okay, do it again. Doesn't like me. All right, why not? Because actually we need to tell the service that we need to decorate this with an attribute to indicate that we want all the exceptions being in there. This is a standard service model, service behavior that we're going to add. Include the exception details. So let's do this again. And hopefully now it's like we will get a little bit more descriptive error message. Oh, yes. And you know, of course, immediately what was wrong. So the point is, like, if you start to reason backwards, it's like, what did I just add? Well, I added the order details table. And if you go look inside SQL Server or some other tool, you will find it has a composite key. Right? It has orders and products as the primary key of the table. And surprise, surprise, it doesn't understand that by default. So what do we need to do? We actually need to tell the system that we have a composite key. Okay, so no fear. What are we going to do? We're just going to add some little class to help us add a class. Class one is fine. Okay, and it just needs some partial class. So I need to have this data service over my partial public partial class. And I need that for this guy. Okay. Oops. Wake up. Thank you. Hi. And so what is the key here? Well, okay, let's go and find out order details. So it's order ID. ID was uppercase. And products ID. Okay? And then we need to do the same for this other puppy. Okay, so this goes here. And it has a key of employee ID. And what was the other one? Territory ID. Okay. And if I didn't goof it up, we should now be able to get to this. And I can actually go to orders. Okay. Get my orders back. Find an order. And actually immediately go to the order details of a specific order. Okay? So there are certain tricks you need to learn. This is what I meant with this, like, figuring out, it's like, how the URI navigation model is going to work. I guess because at the end of the day, it's like, that's what you're going to do. It's like, you need to have a very seamless experience that is natural to the application of how to get to this information. Now, you could, of course, say, it's like, well, I don't care. I'm hiding myself behind link. I'm going to use a one-to-one mapping. But there will be a point in time that you're going to hook this up to another tool. Right? Because you could say, I'm actually going to Excel. Actually, that should be up here. Go to Excel. So here we have Excel. And we'll go to Power Pivot. Okay. And once Power Pivot has been installed, I'm going to pull some data feeds. All right, I'm going to point it to my little service that I created. Next. All right, it will pull in my data. Let's select all for now, finish. And what I can then start to do is bring this information into Power Pivot. Okay? And now I can start to build this up as a regular pivot table inside my world and start to expose this information for the various things. Right, and I can do all sorts of interesting things from a Power Pivot point of view. At that point in time, users do care about the URI kind of interaction. Right? So don't underestimate the importance of getting that right, is the main point. Okay, so we saw how we hook up a link set. Now it's like, I want to get a little bit more advanced. So let's go back to, here I was. So we saw the reflection provider that we have. So we have basically three built-in providers, although the last two are effectively the same. It has a little bit more knowledge about the entity sets that are being described by Link to SQL, which is why it's called out as a separate provider, but effectively there are two basic answers. So what if that doesn't fit? All right, and again, it's like this is where we, when we did our exploration of like how to expose a directory through an OData feed, this is where questions that we needed to ask ourselves. Do our shapes actually change over time? Right, what is my contract? Right, am I going to allow people to add shapes? Right, if I'm using a reflection-based provider, I need CLR types. Maybe I'm not even a CLR person, right? It's like I have a set of JavaScript consumers out there, which is like don't care about CLR type systems. Maybe I don't have the type per se. You need to find IDs, as we saw, to infer what the key system is that you need to use to navigate your hierarchy. If I'm using CLR and reflection, it's like it exposes everything that's public on that class. You might not want that. Right? You might want to have more fine-grained control. It's like there's certain aspects that you don't want to air inside your data feed. You cannot use the concepts that are called open types, which are effectively properties that you only can, that you integrate into your feed once you ask for them. Right? Think of them as, I forgot the term. Oh, I'll come back to me. And it's like you simply have less control. Because like if you want to modify your metadata or you start to rename properties, you're effectively breaking your contract. Right. So all of this are questions that you should ask yourself. It's like, is this restricting my data feed or not? And so this is listed as the reflection provider limitations. And the reason why is because like when using the entity data framework, you actually have this abstraction layer in the middle where you can do the mapping inside the entity data model. So there is a lot of that mapping that you can do at the model level inside the entity framework. But there are only so many data sources you can access with the entity data model, SQL and SQL. Right. Now there is Oracle is working on stuff apparently and IBM, but it's not a very rich set of providers today. So for us, these were deal breakers. Because we allow an extensible schema. It's like people can walk up to a directory and add a schema extension. Right. Schema extensions can evolve over time. We needed to have control over who actually gets access to the service. Right. So we needed to find our grain security control. We needed to integrate it with claim-based security, for example. So these were all things that it's like we needed to do. So what is the answer? Well, the answer is like that you can always write your own provider. And what that allows you to do is plug in an arbitrary data source that you expose to this provider as an OData feed. So that allows you to take advantage of all these clients out there that can talk OData on different platforms and give them access to your data. Read only, read write. So we do that through some hard labor. Right? So there is a provider model that you need to implement. So first of all, you implement the I service provider interface, which comes out of service model, right, which is a system namespace, which allows the service to detect which kind of capabilities are you exposing. At a minimum, you need to provide two kinds of interfaces inside your provider. And if you start to think about it, that seems reasonable. First of all, you always need to be able to provide metadata. So the first thing that you implement is a metadata provider. This provides the information back to the OData data service runtime, which it can then expose when somebody calls for metadata. The second one is the query provider. If you have data and you want to expose it, the first thing that you want to do is want to build this query provider. So those are the two minimum interfaces that you need to implement to create a read-only data provider. The other ones are optional, right? If you want to make it updatable, you have to implement the update provider, which is an optional choice. You can implement the stream provider. So if you have large blobs that you need to move, like binaries or other kind of interesting streams that you need to move, it's like you want to do that as a stream instead of as a payload, right? And then it's like for most things, it's like there's a chance that you have to implement the paging provider. Now, there's basic paging that you actually can do yourself, right? By implementing some stuff in the service, which we'll see. So now, once we are at the service provider level, there are actually a couple of things that you need to understand. So first of all, there is the differentiation between typed providers and untyped providers. Typed providers, you can actually benefit from a lot of our stuff that we have, that you can still use a little bit of reflection to reflect over the shapes of your type, and that will automatically wire it up. But now you're in control of the hydration of all your classes, etc. So that is a good way of exposing a current set of classes that you have in a more efficient way than sticking them into a list inside some static methods. Right, because you probably don't have a static method laying around with a property that says, like, here you have all the entries on my service. Right? It's probably not how you wrote it. An untyped provider, you create if you don't have any metadata, or any CLR types, sorry, wrong statement. If you don't have any CLR types, what do? You just provide it with the metadata as it comes. So this is what we do. This is what SharePoint does, right? And simply because we need to be able to deal with extensibility. The other thing is like we don't necessarily care about .NET types if our clients are not .NET. If you want to have rich navigation support and be able to drive your store underneath and streaming support, we already talked about that. All right, so let's go back to our little project and see what this means. All right, we have 11 minutes, perfect. So we already have, let's clean up some stuff here. Let's get out of the way. All this stuff can go. All right. So what I have here is I have a little service provider. Right. The data service is simply a data service. All right. That derives from data service T. Right. It implements the I service provider method, and the T is actually sourced by what we call the DSP context, right? The context that the provider supports. Right. So that's this class over here. You want to have some basic things like a metadata provider and a query provider. And the first call you always get goes to this get service, right? Where it's like the data service will ask you the question, what do you support? What is the class that implements the metadata provider? What is the instance of the class that implements the query provider? Right, that's the basic thing you need to implement. Then it's like you build your metadata provider and your query provider. Now, what I've done is, so let's change this. And so we're going to make this the DSP data service. Of the DSP context. Okay. Compile that. And then it's like I'm actually let's set as a start page, 11, step into this. All right. So right now what happens is like this provider doesn't do Jack Doodle. All right, but it is the minimum providing running framework that you can get. Right, so we took the interfaces, it implemented some stub functions, but it immediately will show you that you're up and running with something. Right? And the key thing is like when we had some developers doing this, it's like having something running quickly allows you to be a lot more productive. And then you can start to wire up all the missing pieces. Okay. So first of all, it's going to ask me is like if I have a metadata provider. The metadata provider will step in. I'm not sure why I hit the wrong key. Sorry. So it will wire up a service provider, set all the metadata to read-only, return that. All right. Then it will go back, ask for the query provider, go into the query provider, ask for its current data source, return the data source. In this case, we take the basic. Data source is not null. It's like we will wire it up to the context, set the service configuration so we can access the information, set the up, and at the end of the day, right now we have a default provider up and running. All right. Now it's like we need to start filling in the blanks. So this is what you would need to do to get the basics working. Now I'll not stop here, but it sort of gives you the idea about what is the minimum thing I need to do. Three classes, implement three interfaces, two instance properties to hold on to your metadata and your query provider, and you're cooking with gas. All right, and then you can start to walk from there. So let's walk up to a instance, and I need to see which one I have where. So the one that I have here actually is a typed provider, including navigation. And so the reason why it's typed is like because we're going to feed it off the product entity class. All right, so I have two basic entities here. I have a product entity, and I have a category entity that I'm going to wire up. All right, so I'm going to do the same thing to show you it's like how we actually can walk through this. So let's set this as the startup page, step into this. All right. So same thing, same drill. Ask me for the metadata provider. So what is the metadata? Step into the metadata provider. Metadata provider will call into create DSP where all the interesting work is going to happen. So here, we are providing the information back to the data service about which resource types, which resource properties, and what are the resource sets, and how do they navigate to each other. Right, these are the four things that you're going to teach the data service that you've been called on. Now, since this is typed, I can actually say that the resource type, stepped over it. All right. I can say that the resource type is the type of a certain entity here. I want to call it product. So here what you see is if I would not have done that, it would have been called product entity. All right. So I'm actually already taking advantage of the fact that it's like I'm using my own metadata to provide an environment to the user that is different than the physical implementation. All right. So I call it products. Then I'm going to expose some metadata. So I always have to indicate what the key is. Right, so this is my navigational pivot. Then I'm going to add the primitive types. If it's a primitive type, I can describe it, in this case, without the data type. Why? Because that is being picked up through reflection over the type. Right? So I'm adding the types. Then I'm saying that it's like this resort type is exposed in a container called products. Right, so this is what gives you the plural of the entity. And this goes on, it goes to categories, right, adds categories into the data. And then the last thing that you want to do is it adds the navigational support. So here you wire up the relationships between the category and the products class. Okay? So you let it go. Okay, let's go. Right, so here I am in my class. I expose products and categories. Right, and I can now go from products. Right, remove the breakpoints for you now. So you see that we're actually going through this. Okay. And I can say, all right, products 0. Right, and now it's like I want to have the related categories of this. Right, so I'm asking for the category. Information of this. And that's, you see, how the navigational structure actually works. All right. So this is how you take a set of information and exposing it yourselves, using the help of types to define what it is about. Now you can go one step further. All right. And let's close this and go to the other one. This is the same variation, but now it's using untyped. Right, so the key thing here is that we don't have an entity to help us out. Right, and the only thing that is significantly different is in the create metadata source. Right, so here, we actually now have to say that it's like we have a resource set. It's like we need to describe all the types. Right, and we need to wire it up into the system using very generic things like a DSP resource in this case. So that is, sorry, this is the data set. Here we go. I was talking about the wrong piece. All right. This is where we now need to do. And the key difference here is that product, the thing that changed, is that I need to provide the primitive data types. That's all. That's all that is changing at the end of the day. So now this allows me to build up an environment where my metadata changes per call. All right, so I can start this guy up again, but it's going to be boring now because it's going to be the same. All right. So this has my data servers. Let's go from categories now. Right. Categories. Categories 1. All right, and then it's like I want to have the products. Actually, that's one of the problems I did. It's like I created it case sensitive. So that's why it failed. All right, so this shows you is like how I can take a custom data set and wire it into my world as no data set. All right. So what is in there for you? So OData provides a protocol. WCF Data Services provides you a framework to expose information through OData or access information over an OData protocol. Right, so there are two sides of the equation, clients and servers, or producers and consumers. So you can start to use this today, right? Assuming you're on 3.5, you can use this with Visual Studio 2008, you can use it with Visual Studio 2010. As you will see, if you go to Azure, right, Azure tables are exposed as OData services, for example. Right, and you will start to find SQL Azure exposing information as data services, SQL reporting services information as data services. So you can learn about OData. Go to odata.org. You will find the frameworks there for the clients and the services, and it will help you expose your data in a very generic form, so it's ready for the web, so people can mash it up and integrate it into their data sources. Here are some resources. And besides that, I want to thank you for your attention. I hope this was useful. Thank you.